The Herr had announced on St. Aurelia's Day that he would send a train of wagons to the Freiburg markets to sell his wine and hides and to purchase cloth and other goods, and so a frenzy of activity consumed the village. The large four-wheeled wagons were brought out, trucks and wheels inspected, harnesses repaired, axles rubbed with tallow. The villagers, meanwhile, studied their own stores for marketable goods and assembled consignments of hides, tallow, honey, mead, and wine, as their wit and possessions dictated. Klaus had named Gregor to drive the commune's wagon. Dietrich found the mason in the green, seeing to the stowage of the wagons.
"Be sure that barrel is tied tight," Gregor warned his son. "Good day, Pastor. Have something for the markets?"
Dietrich handed him the letter he had written. "Not to sell, but give this to Archdeacon Willi." The mason studied the packet and the red wax seal into which Dietrich had set his signet.
"This looks official," he said.
"Only some questions I have."
Gregor laughed. "I thought you were the one with answers. You're never going to town with us, Pastor. A learned man like yourself would find much interest there."
"Perhaps too much," Dietrich answered. "Do you know what Friar Peter of Apulia once answered when asked what he thought of Joachim of Flora's teaching?"
Gregor had ducked under the wagon bed and began greasing the axles.
"No, what?"
"He said, 'I care as little for Joachim as for the fifth wheel of a wagon.'"
"What? A fifth wheel? Ah, thunder weather!"
Gregor had banged his head on the cart's underside.
"A fifth wheel," he said, sliding out from under.
"Oh." Dietrich turned to see Brother Joachim stalking off. He started after him, but Everard, who had been overseeing the estate wagons, took Dietrich by the arm.
"The Herr has summoned three of his knights to serve as guards," he said, "but he wants Max to lead a troop of armsmen. Falkenstein won't plunder the train going down."
"What does he need with honey, save to sweeten his disposition?"
"But the return might prove too tempting. All that silver would jingle like the preparation bell at Mass, and his greed may overcome his prudence. Max is gone to the Lazaretto. Take one of the Herr's palafridi and go fetch him back."
Dietrich gestured toward his departing houseguest.
"I must speak to—" "The word the Herr used was now. Discuss it with him, not me."
Dietrich did not want to visit the talking animals. Who knew to what acts their instinct would drive them? He glanced at the sun.
"Max is likely on his return even now."
Everard twisted his mouth.
"Or else he's not. Those were the Herr's instructions. No one else has his leave to go there, God be thanked, to deal with
them." Dietrich hesitated. "Manfred's told you, hasn't he, about the Kränken?" Everard would not meet his eyes.
"I don't know which would be worse, to see them face to face or to imagine them."
He shivered.
"Yes, he's told me about them.
And Max, who uses his head for more than helmet padding, swears they are mortal.
For myself, I have a wagon train to organize. Don't bother me. Thierry and the others arrive on the morrow, and I'm not ready."
Dietrich crossed the valley to the stables, where Gunther already waited with a fine road horse.
"It sorrows me," Gunther said, "that I cannot offer you a jennet."
Jennets, or palfrey mules, were bred for use by women and clergy, and owned a mule's more stolid disposition. Nettled, Dietrich ignored Gunther's cupped hands and mounted from the stirrup. Taking the reins from the startled mayordomo, he danced the horse a few paces to show it he was master, then kicked with his heels. He had no spurs, for a commoner to wear them would violate the Swabian peace, but the horse accepted the thesis and set off at a walk. On the road, Dietrich took his mount to a trot, enjoying the rhythm of the creature and the feel of the wind on his face. It had been a long while since he had ridden so fine a beast as this, and he lost his thoughts for a time in sheer animal pleasure. But he should not have let his pride master him. Gunther might wonder how a mere parish priest had won such horse skills.
Manfred, no doubt, had his reasons, but Dietrich wished he had not told Everard about the Kränken.
Word would leak out in the end, but there was no point auguring holes in the bucket. At the place where the trees had been blown down, he spied the miller's jennet, picketed by the stump where Hilda used to leave the food. No other mount was near, but since Max would not have abandoned Hilda, he must have ridden the shoemaker's black horse. Dietrich dismounted, slipped a hippopede onto his palfrey's hind legs, and set forth on the track that Max had blazed. Although the day was high, he was soon enveloped in a green gloaming. Spruce and fir reached into the sky, while the more humble hazel, shorn now of their raiment, huddled naked beneath them. He had not gone far when he heard soft, womanly gasps echoing off the trees, as if the forest itself moaned. Dietrich's heart beat faster. The forest, always menacing, took on a more sinister aspect. Groaning dryads reached to embrace him with dry, naked fingers. "I'm lost," he thought, and he looked about in panic for Max's signs. He turned, and a branch scratched his cheek. He gasped, ran, crashed into a white birch. He twisted away, desperate now to reach his horse. Coming to a swell of ground, he slipped and fell. He pressed his head against the ancient leafy mat and musky earth, waiting for the forest to grab him. But the expected touch did not come, and he grew slowly more aware that the moans had ceased. Raising his head, he saw below him not the clearing where his horse awaited, but the brook where he and Max and Hilda had paused that first day. Tied to a spindly oak that twisted from the bank of the stream stood two rounces. Max and Hilda were there, lacing a codpiece in place, tugging a skirt back down. Max brushed leaves and dirt and fir needles from Hilda's cover slot, squeezing her breasts while he did. Dietrich crawled backward, unseen. Max had been right. Sound did carry in the forest. Then, rising, he scrabbled back among the spruce, blundering from clearing to copse, until fortune showed him the blazes, and he followed them to where he had left the palfrey. The jennet he had seen there earlier was gone. Since Max was returning already to the village, Dietrich headed his mount also homeward, happy that he need not proceed to the lazaretto. But coming to a bend in the trail, the beast balked. Dietrich clamped the barrel with his thighs until the horse had bolted a few paces back toward the kiln. At that it calmed somewhat, and Dietrich spoke soothingly. The palfrey rolled wild, round eyes and whickered nervously. "Be still, sister horse," he told her. Fitting the head harness in place, he said, "Hans, are you on the kiln trail?" Only the rustling of pine needles and dry branches fell upon his ears. That and the inevitable distant chitterings of the krenkin, which being so natural a sound seemed more a part of the forest than had the amorous cries of Hilda Müller in the arms of Max Schweitzer. "Come no nearer," said the voice of the Heinzelmonken in his ear. Dietrich remained still. The sun was visible through the iron-gray lacework of trees, but stood already lower than he wished. "You bar my path," Dietrich said. "Gescherts, artisans, want for 200 shoe lengths of copper wire. Know your kind, the art of wire drawing?" Question. "It must be drawn to the fineness of a pin with no cracks." Dietrich rubbed his chin. "Lawrence is a blacksmith. Copper may lie beyond his art." "So, where finds one a coppersmith?" Question. "In Freiburg," Dietrich said. "But copper is dear. Lawrence might do the task from charity, but not a Freiburg guildsman." "I will give you a copper brick we have mined from rocks near here. The smith may keep whatever is not used for the wire."
"And this wire will further your departure?"
"Lacking it, we cannot leave. Prying the copper from the ore required only heat. We have not the means to draw it. Dietrich, you do not have the sentence in your head to do this. I hear it in your words. You will not go to Freetown."
"There are risks."
"So... there are then limits to this charity of yours, to this rent you owe the hare from the stars. When he returns, he will thrash those who fail to do his bidding."
"No," said Dietrich, "that is not how he rules. His ways are mysterious to men." And what better proof than this encounter, he thought. He glanced once toward the clouds as if he expected to see Jesus there laughing. "Nah.
Give me the ingot, and I will see to its drawing.
But Hans would not approach him, and left the ingot on the trail.